Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Emor. This podcast is for Emor, which is on Shabbat, the 5th of May, if you are in Israel, and will be on Shabbat, the 12th of May, if you are outside of Israel. The two schedules for Parshiot for people in Israel and outside of Israel will synchronize again with Bamidbar in a couple of weeks. But until then, the Israelis are 1 week ahead if you live outside of Israel, or if you're in Israel, folks who are elsewhere are 1 week behind. And either way, we've got all of the Parshiot online ready for you when it's your week for the Parsha. This week is also a time to remind you that if you're in Jerusalem for Shavuot, then I encourage you to check into and attend the Leil Shavuot learning at Pardes, at the Pardes campus. It's a fantastic time, all night long, superb teachers, and I urge you to look into it. Details are on the Pardes website. And now Rabbi David Levenkruis is going to discuss the Parsha. Rabbi David Levenkruis is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Programs. There is a handout for this podcast, so please print that out. It's the next episode that I'm going to be sending. And follow along with Rabbi David Levenkruis.
Thank you, Larry. An hour or two ago, I participated in a fascinating debate, and one of the issues that came up was the question of Jews who, in the name of Judaism or in the name of Israel, do things that other people feel is harmful to the Jewish religion or to the state. And we got into a very, very interesting discussion about the danger that people can present who are within the system and who nevertheless have the ability to destroy it. This issue comes up very, very much in our parsha, about the blasphemer in the camp. It's a classic example of somebody who from within is trying to destroy. What I'd like to do together today is to look at the story, to look at what the argument was about, and finally to see what we have to learn from it in terms of dealing with people in our own system who seem to be threatening the system. So if you look at your first source sheet, which is, there's some verses left out. If you look at the first piece in your source sheet, there came out from among the Israelite one whose mother was Israelite and whose father was Egyptian. So it's a very, very interesting, we know the person's ancestry. On the one hand, he's an Israelite. On the other hand, his father's Egyptian, not Jewish, and therefore somewhat suspect. A fight broke out in the camp between the half-Israelite and a certain Israelite, and then this half-Jewish person, for want of a better word, pronounces the name of God blasphemously, and he's brought to Moshe, and he's put into jail, and God says to Moses, "Take the blasphemer outside the camp, let everybody who heard him lay their hands upon his head, and let the whole community stone him." Quite, and for modern eyes, certainly, this is a very, very tough punishment, and this is, in fact, what did happen. Today, we're not going to be looking at the ethics of stoning the blasphemer. That, I'm sure, we will do, hopefully, another time. What we're going to look at is, what was this argument about? Why? How did it come to a situation that a fight broke out and somebody cursed God? We're going to look at that. And then we're going to try, as I said, to see what messages we have to glean from that for today. So the first suggestion of the rabbis, which is perhaps the most obvious suggestion from the text itself, is that there was some argument either about the status or the faith of the father. The text, as we saw, says in black and white that his mother's an Israelite, his father is an Egyptian. And there's an implication that perhaps, as we see in the third source, Shmot 12:38, he was part of the Erev Rav, the mixed multitude who came out of Egypt with the Jewish people. Not only pure Israelites came out, but also hangers-on, people who had become part of the story. These people were perhaps suspect, and this man could have been suspect too. On the other hand, the tradition goes to great pains to say this was not the case. In the fourth source, Vayikra 24:22, we have the statement, Mishpat echad yeh lachem, kager keezrach yeh ki ani Adonai Elohechem. You shall have one standard for strangers and citizens alike. And the Sforno, in the fifth source that I gave you, said that he wasn't stoned because of xenophobia. It wasn't because he had done something wrong, but rather to fulfill the commandment of God. Anybody who had blasphemed God would have received the same punishment. Nevertheless, to my mind, the question still remains, why was it Dafka this person who blasphemed God in the camp? So the first theory is that they were arguing about his status or the faith of his fathers. It was some type of a prejudice, if you will. But the tradition also goes to great pains to reject the idea. The second idea, if you will, is that he was uppity. He tried to go higher than what his station would be. We read in number 7, Bamidbar, Bet, every man of the Israelites would pitch their standard with a special flag in a certain formation. And Rashi tells us, basing himself on a Baraita, that he would go to the tribe of Dan, which made perfect sense to him, since his mother was a Danite. She was from the tribe of Dan. And he said, when they came and they said to him, what are you doing here? He said, I'm from Dan. What's the problem? I'm from Dan. And they point out to him, it doesn't say every person from Dan. It says every man should come from their father's house. In other words, he is there illegitimately. He went out of bounds. He tried to get involved in a group that he was not a member of. He then was taken to trial, comes out guilty, according to the Baraita, arose and blasphemed. In other words, he had a powerful feeling of rejection and therefore decided to blaspheme in the camp. So we have one reason that is status/religious, a second reason which is social, if you will, and a third reason which is more ritualistic, and that is that we read in Vayikra 24 that the end of each week you made 12 chalot and put them on the altar, put it on the special table. And Rashi, again quoting the Gemara, says that what would happen is that this man, who interestingly enough has no name, his mother has a name, but he has no name, his mother, who is a full Jew or a full Israelite, exists as a person. He does not really exist as a person. He says he would make fun of it. He says that, you know, kings eat warm, fresh bread every day. Why is it that over here we expect the Kohanim to have cold bread? He's making fun of the bread. He's making fun of the sacrifice. He's making fun of moldy bread. Just as an aside, in Masechet Chagiga, it tells us that a miracle happened every week, and in fact the bread was warm and fresh. It may look over here as if this gentleman is worrying about the Kohanim, but I think what we have over here, and this happens sometimes, is you hear people criticizing an aspect of a law or criticizing the law as being unjust, and you have the feeling it's not really the law that they're opposing. It's not really the injustice that they're opposing, but they really dislike the entire system and are trying to find something to oppose it. So three different reasons as to what was going on. One is that it's an issue of status. The second is that it's an issue of knowing one's place in society. And the third, it's an issue of ritual. And I think when it comes to message, there are two very, very clear ways to read the story. On the one hand, it's a story of a subversive person, somebody who is both within and outside of the system. And it's interesting, even when you look at the language that is used, he's called a Ben Mitzri, he's called a Ben Yisrael, Ben Isha Yisraelit. Very, very clear idea that he's of mixed background. So we have an example of somebody who is both within and without, who's subversive, who wants to destroy the system, and we need to be very, very careful of these people. I think that's one way to read the story, and I could turn the mic off over here, and we could have a very, very powerful story about somebody who tried to destroy the Israelite people from within. But I think that there is a more sympathetic way to read it, and that is to look at the man as being really neither. He's a citizen, a Ben Yisraelit, but also a stranger, a Ben Mitzri. He can be part of the Jewish people and part of their story, but he also cannot be part of a tribe. If I look at the second, the story that Rashi brings in Vayikra about him pitching his tent at the tribe of Dan, in my mind I have a different vision. What would have happened if instead of pitching his tent at the tribe of Dan and doing something that was so provocative, what would have happened if instead he had gone to Moses before pitching his tent and say, hey, I'm in a difficult position. I am part of the Israelite people, but I also don't have a tribe. Please help me to deal with this. And what would have happened if Moshe and Moshe's Beit Din, Moshe's court, instead of saying that he was guilty, had said to him, we're going to do like what we did with Bnot Zlofchad. We're going to do the same thing that we did with the daughters of Zlofchad. You'll remember in that story, their father died, leaving no sons. The land would have been lost to the family. And instead, the daughters came and said, we would like to inherit the land. And indeed, the law was set down that if there are no sons, the daughter can inherit the land. Wouldn't it be great if in this case they'd said, yes, it's true you don't have a tribe, but when your father is not an Israelite, you go according to your mother's tribe. In other words, my claim is that there needed to be a little bit more of openness on each side. The man himself should not have acted provocatively. The Beit Din should have acted more sympathetically. If we look at our own issues today about who's in and who's out, about whether people are really doing things for the good of the Jewish people or not, I wish to make two points. One is that there genuinely are Jews sometimes who are doing things that are not for the benefit of the Jewish people, not for the benefit of the Torah, not for the benefit of the state of Israel. And sometimes one does have to say, this far and no further. On the other hand, I have a very, very powerful suspicion that with more goodwill on all sides, on the sides of the establishment, on the sides of the people not accepted by the establishment, with more openness, with more goodwill on either side, we could build that, make the tent that is Judaism much, much bigger than it is at the moment, and hopefully thereby being a stronger, more vibrant people than we are. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.